The views expressed on the following live program do not necessarily reflect those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Well, good afternoon, Santa Cruz. I'm back. This is Richard Quigley, KSCO, AM 1080. We're going to do a little talk show here for about the next 40 minutes. Talk about one thing and another. I'll probably start with my trip to Nevada. That was kind of fun. The call-in lines are area code 831-479-1080, 477-1340. If you want to write something down and just fax it in, the fax number is 475-2967. This is a talk show, which is supposed to be a two-way street. I talk some, you talk some, and together we reach some brilliant conclusions. So, I wasn't here last Thursday, did Tuesday instead, and I have a feeling that there are some folks that listen on Thursday that don't listen on Tuesday. It was an awkward day, sort in some ways, but so be it. On the top of my list today of things to talk about, usually I use this part for my rants, and my rant is ongoing about these shooters as it relates to cigarettes. I understand that the troops have finally got their situation with cigarettes handled, and they've got all they need. In fact, I was reading, there's this newsletter that goes out from the Republican Party. A guy by the name of Chuck Muth. Some of you guys that are inside the Republican Party and keep track of the movers and shakers and all that probably have heard of Chuck, may even be on his email news group. But this guy sends out some pretty good stuff every day. He calls it News and Views, and I get it in my mailbox. I like going through it. There's some perspectives that you don't get every day, and it's nice to know that people are tracking. If you're interested in getting signed on to his little newsletter, you can go to chuckmuth.com. And I was there this morning. It looks like it's fairly easy to sign up. And that's all one word, Chuck Muth, MUTH.com. And have him send those out to you. I use a lot of the material as jump-off points for things that I'm going to talk about from time to time down here. So, with regard to the shooters and the tobacco thing, it's frustrating. Bridget and Ron down there on Soquel have, I don't know if you guys remember, a couple of weeks ago I was on a major rant because it was around the 3rd, I believe, of April, and I was on a major rant because I found out that our troops were over there halfway around the world out of smokes, out of any kind of tobacco, and started shaking the bushes to find out what we could do about it. And there wasn't anything we could do to relieve the immediate problem. But in the process of that, Bridget did a bunch of work trying to find out how we could get smokes over there, and she has found an avenue. I understand that she's picked up a few bucks already. She's accepting donations, and these things will be boxed up and packaged up and sent to the troops. So if you want to see if you can help with the tobacco needs of our military, you can stop by and see Bridget Ron over there at that tobacco place down in Soquel, and she'll fill you in on the details. I tried to get her call me in on the phone today so we could talk about what she'd done, but she has this claim to shyness that that keeps her off the phone, and I'm not going to push it. I know better. So that's what's going on with that. The trip to Nevada was kind of fun. For those of you that don't know, it's one of my major battles right now is dealing with mandatory motorcycle helmet laws. And in line with that, I went to Nevada a couple years ago and got a ticket because it's my belief that the problem with the helmet laws is that whether or not you believe we do or do not need them, need the government telling us that we have to wear them, the old nanny thing. The fact is, if you can't describe it in adequate terms, to allow someone to prove that they are in compliance or allow the officer to prove that they're not in compliance, then those statutes are generally considered vague and taken out by the courts. And that's the tack that we have taken, I have taken in the last 12 years that I've been fighting, certainly California's helmet law. But in Nevada, I go to Nevada and get stopped by a young officer over there because he has this just firm belief that I'm supposed to be wearing a DOT-approved helmet, which is a whole other thing. There's a bunch of people out there that believe that DOT approves helmets. Now, that would mean the Department of Transportation. And they believe that the Holy Toledo. Do I see Bridget on line two? If that's Bridget, I think it is. I'm going to wait for somebody to turn it green. No, she's just talking. Okay. Anyway, this officer stops me, and he actually shut me down alongside the road. I couldn't ride away because I didn't have a DOT-approved helmet. So I went to work on their helmet law. And to spare you all the detail, we got to a legislative hearing on Thursday last. It was the Senate Transportation Committee. And from the time that I'd gotten the ticket until... Okay, from the time I'd gotten the ticket until we got to the legislature, a lot of things had happened. One of them was is that we had managed to get an attorney general's opinion saying that the statute could not be enforced. It was confusing. It needed to be fixed, and it was too severe in its penalty. It was a misdemeanor. And we had gotten the promise from the head of the Highway Patrol to come in and testify that the statute was unenforceable, that he couldn't tell his officers how to enforce it. He couldn't guarantee my rights. He couldn't guarantee that they wouldn't get in trouble for making some bad decisions. So I went in and I testified in front of that committee Thursday. And if none of you have ever done that, it's one of the things that I recommend to all citizens. And it doesn't fall under that should column, except unless you're looking for a way to further your education. It's not necessary, but it certainly is effective in getting the government on their toes if they have the opportunity to deal with the citizens once in a while about what they're doing. So I'm going to get back to this story in a minute. I can't hardly wait to talk to Ron. Ron's calling in, and this is Ron of Ron and Bridget's, their tobacco store down there in Santa Cruz. Ron, you there? Hello, did I get him? I didn't get him. There you go. That's why we ask if you're there. Are you there, Ron?
I'm here.
What is it that Bridget sent up? How did you guys get this thing wired, and how can we help get smokes to the troops and other tobacco products?
Well, what we went ahead and did was we got some addresses overseas of some of the servicemen that are serving, so we're going to mail these gift packages full of tobacco products to them.
Okay, now is this going to be just for their personal consumption, or is this going to be passed out among the troops over there?
Be passed out among the troops over there.
So from the time that somebody stopped by there, for example, picked up a carton or two of cigarettes or a couple of packs of cigarettes and dropped them in a box, from the time they did that until the stuff actually got to them guys over there in Iraq, do you have any idea how long that would take?
It'd probably take about 10 days, I was told.
Okay. Is Bridget going to be putting a little note in there explaining that this comes with love from the country by way of apology for their running out?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly right. So we'll get everybody's name. We'll put it in each package. So, little thank you from Santa Cruz, California.
Well, that'd be awesome. Well, maybe we can get some folks to stop by there and drop some stuff in the box. I really appreciate the way you guys responded when that thing went out. I know that you were as shocked as I was. And good. Maybe some people come by and see you today. I got to come by and get some smoke myself. Ron, I thank you very much, and I'll talk to you later today.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, boss.
Take care, man.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, there you go. That's Ron and Bridget's tobacco store. Bridget and Ron's tobacco store. Don't let me get the order wrong on that one. She'll have my head. And they're down there across from the fire station on SoCal. Anyway, back to the Nevada legislature. I'm Richard Quigley, by the way. You're listening to KSCO AM 1080. Call in lines 479-1080, 477-1340. Fax at 475-2967. I show up for this hearing. I drove from here to Carson City on Wednesday night, so I'd be ready. I went in and sat down, and as usual, the first speaker that spoke in favor of this repeal of Nevada's helmet law was virtually, if you've ever been, like I say, if you haven't been, you'd have to see it to believe it. These committees that you hear about, you know, fancy name, Senate Transportation Committee, it's seven people. And they sit up there, and citizens get to come in and talk to them. And it's pretty much like being a non-agenda item at the Board of Supervisors. You can go in there and talk to them all you want, but you're not going to get anything done. They already know what they're going to do. It's pretty much a waste of time, except to the degree that you can build a record. Excuse me. Anyway, except to the degree that you can build a record of what took place. And the record that we built last Thursday, because needless to say, they were not going to repeal the helmet law. So the record that we set last Thursday was that the committee, the head of the Highway Patrol testified that the statute is unenforceable. This guy came in, this clown, and I got to call him a clown because that's exactly what he was. This clown showed up from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and just, I mean, you would not believe the stories that he told. He just made stuff up to make it look like there wasn't a problem with enforcement. He minimized the problems and maximized the propaganda. And I'm sitting there listening to this, wondering how our tax dollars spent to send this guy in there and mislead the Nevada legislature about the effects of this helmet law on the constitutional rights of their citizens, because they showed a real concern. But by the time he got through with them, and of course everybody's thinking because he's from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that his mission is to provide some sort of highway traffic safety, which of course it's not. Anybody that deals with him knows that what it's really all about is protecting the pay window of the insurance companies. And so the short version is they voted the statute down. The transcript was incredible. I had to sit there. I got to talk to the guys, and it was an interesting conversation. When I go to these committee hearings, one of the things I always notice is that the committee members will sit up there on their little bench and look down on the witness table and find something else to do. I've seen them do everything from cleaning their fingernails to talking to aides and everything. And I promise you folks, when I show up to a meeting, they listen to me. Now, they may not do what I ask them to, but I'll lock up on them. I'll shut up and stare at them if they start doing something else. I did that to Tom Hayden back in 1994 when they were trying to pass the Safe Streets Act. It was one of the most fun things I ever did, and nerve-wracking. But if you ever get to one of these meetings, that's the way to handle them. If they're not paying attention, just sit there and look at them until they turn back and look at you, and then you go ahead and talk to them. And I have the same feeling about the Board of Supervisors, although it's probably unlikely that many of you will go. Rex, I'm sorry you left. I don't know what your comments were on smokes and the troops. I'm going to grab Margaret before she goes away. I don't want to lose her. Margaret, are you there?
Hi. I've got two things I'd like to chat with you about today.
Be gentle.
Never.
Well,
just kidding. Helmet law. You know, the helmet laws, they protect both the wearer of the helmet and the person who may be involved in an accident with the helmet wearer. Because if you are involved in an accident with someone who's wearing a helmet, or someone's not wearing a helmet and they injure their head, and even though you were maybe somewhat at fault or maybe not at all at fault for the accident, the lifelong psychological trauma of being involved in that sort of accident and then knowing that this person, child, whoever, is in a wheelchair, is unfunctional as a human being, a vegetable, whatever. It is a psychological trauma. So it protects both the helmet wearer and the person involved with a altercation with someone wearing a helmet.
Margaret, I'm not going to do this today. I promise I'm not going to do this. I'm nervous about you anyway.
Okay, but number two.
But I can tell you that your opinion is commonly held and sorely lacking in enough factual information. What you describe is in fact a concern. It is just not a legitimate one. The facts don't back it up.
Well, but my brother and my father,
yes, ma'am,
were both
I know there are analyticals. I mean, there are anecdotal stories about all the people that would have been dead if it weren't for helmets. And I have been listening to them for 12 years, and I do not believe in the theory that people can recognize what goes on in a separate reality. What would have happened if?
Well, every accident has its own little zigs and zags and circumstances.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And
the reason that this is important to me is that, first of all, I ride motorcycles, and secondly, I don't know if you're aware of it, the number fluctuates between 67% and 75% depending on who the authority is, but it is a huge majority traffic accidents that involve the motorcycle and another vehicle
yes.
are the fault of the other vehicle.
Doesn't matter whose fault it is.
Well, excuse me.
Accidents or accidents?
No. These are. I'm not talking about accidents. I'm talking about crashes. I'm talking about there is no fault for an accident. An accident is an accident. No, ma'am. We're talking about crashes. And the problem that I have with the state mandating helmet laws is that before they mandate helmet laws, there are some things that can be done to protect motorcyclists from motor vehicle drivers. And if you'll notice in your DMV books in the last 5 or 6 years, you have seen the first questions in the history of the state of California regarding motorcyclists and how not to kill us. And there's even one on every test now, and that's never been done before. And they haven't even scratched the surface on what they can do to help folks like yourself. There's got to be no more sinking feeling in the world than to turn left in front of somebody and put them in the hospital mm-hmm. because somebody didn't tell you how many times that happens to us.
Yeah, because they don't signal for a minimum of 3 seconds before you move the steering wheel.
I've had them look right straight at me and pull straight out in front
me
of
too.
Me. People do not see motorcycles because we do not constitute a threat to them. If I were in an 18-wheeler truck, I can promise you that the people that have turned in front of me and pulled in front of me would have never done it.
Sure. They're distracted. They're not paying attention.
Exactly.
They're distracted.
Exactly.
And,
but where are all
everything is trying to make them distracted, everything from music and
telephones,
and
conversation
shiny cars,
with somebody,
colors,
and
advertising.
Daydreaming or putting on makeup. Yes, all
on
those
and on.
Things.
So,
and,
you have to, there is just no way to really be 100% safe. The biggest
car,
risk you have to your life today is getting in that car, period.
Well, yes, ma'am. And by the way, number one killer in cars, the number one reason for people dying in cars with airbags, seatbelts, and all the rest are head injuries.
Yes.
And if head injuries are killing and crippling that many people in cars, why don't they have mandatory helmet use laws for people in cars? And that's where it's not head injuries,
it's neck and spinal cord.
Oh no,
injuries.
Neck and spinal cords come from the helmet. The number of spinal cord deaths and injuries in the first year of the helmet law in California went up 800%. Now it's just a statistical fact.
They don't want to talk about that. You don't think they've got that same injury level if the head's bumped too?
Well, no. Interestingly enough, no.
No.
This is what's amazing about propaganda. In the first year of the helmet law, NHTSA came out and explained that the number of deaths in California had dropped by 32%. They did not point out that the number of miles traveled by motorcycle dropped 40. They only pointed out that the number of deaths dropped 32%. Now, that is the number of people killed on motorcycles, which had been declining every year
right. Because
of rider safety training. Now, stay with me a minute. But the number of deaths per 100 accidents, which is that would be where a helmet would step in and fix things. If you got three people, the chances of dying are 3%. 3 in 100 accidents, reported accidents, result in the death of a rider, and it's pretty close to that, by the way. 3 out of 100 reported or collisions result in the death of the motorcycle rider. After the helmet law, that number changed not one iota. Now, there's no way to explain that except that the helmets are not a contributing factor to saving lives. Otherwise, it would have been 2% or 1.5%. But no, ma'am. In fact, actually, I think it went from 2.82% to 2.86%. So it went up slightly, which might, you know, be the result of the broken necks from the weight of the helmet. Now, the helmet law issue, we could go on for days. Bottom line is it's a nanny law. Mm. I hate it.
Mm.
I hate it because it's a nanny law. There's just some things that's just none of people's business, and I think that's at the top of the list.
Mm.
And speaking of business, if you'll stay on, Margaret, because I'm not so scared of you now, if you'll just stay on for a minute, what I'm going to do is I'm going to punch up a commercial, and we'll listen to a couple spots, and then I'll come back, and we'll pick up on what you got to say about cigarette smokers. Can we do that together?
Thank you so much.
All right, hold on there. All right, with that in mind, we're going to go ahead and start with this and see how things go.
BFI Waste Services reminds parents that if your child is ever confronted by a stranger, it's important that they are able to act logically. Enlighten, don't frighten your children about personal safety. Role play with your kids, find their weak spots, and reinforce safety rules with them on a regular basis. This important message is brought to you by BFI Waste Services. That's BFI Waste Services, located at 271 Rianda Street in Salinas. They are taking the time to be involved.
If recent increases in your homeowner's insurance have you scratching your head in confusion, give Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance a call. Hello, Scott Bedell here for the Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance Agency and the Allied Insurance Company. You can always count on Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance to do things right. And when it comes to homeowner's insurance, right means the low premiums and high dollar coverage of Allied Homeowner's Insurance. Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance and the Allied Group. One agent, one company, and coverage you can trust. 426-3700. That's 426-3700.
Here's my morning routine. Alarm goes off, hit snooze at least once, force self out of bed, put coffee on, go outside, get the Sentinel, shower, dress, drink my coffee, and let the Sentinel tell me some stories about the world around me. I usually don't think about it a lot because it's just part of my daily routine. But with the way the world is today, I'm glad to have a touchstone like the Santa Cruz Sentinel. The happy and the heart-wrenching, the justice and the injustice, it's all in there. Stories, not just the news, but the stories that help me make sense of what's going on in the world, and most importantly, right here in Santa Cruz County. News is news, but a story can touch your life, and the Sentinel always seems to find an angle that brings the story home. The Santa Cruz Sentinel, your news, your stories, every day.
And every Sunday, the Sentinel features insight with world and local views and opinions, Santa Cruz style, featuring stories about the lifestyle of Santa Cruz County, plus financial news in the Sunday Wall Street Journal. The Sunday Sentinel. Check it out.
For great food and fun, Severino's.
Hi, I'm Stella Doro, and I'm here to let you in on my favorite hangout, Severino's. That's right, there's nothing better than settling back in the lounge during happy hours every weekday and having a relaxing stogie by the koi pond. If you're in the mood, stick around for the best local live music Thursdays through Saturdays. Here's the lineup for April. Every Thursday, Roster and the amazing jazz geezers dish out their sultry standards from 6 to 10. Friday, April 4th, come see my swing jazz band, Stella by Barlight. Friday the 11th, join me in Saddle Up and Boogie for a rope trick and tar and feather and western swing and hoedown. The fabulous Wally and his spicy cocktail combo is back Friday, April 18th. Newcomers Sean Alston and his jazz trio make their debut Friday the 25th. Saturdays are for rock and R&B at Sevy's, where you'll find Alligator April 5th, Rust on April 12th, Ron Watson Saturday, April 19th, and Motown Express with Charmaine Scott Saturday, April 26th. Sound like a good time to you? Then meet me later at Severino's.
Okay, back again. All right, I took a cheap segue there. It just seemed like such a sweet one, I couldn't pass it up. I was talking to Margaret. We were, I think, about to segue ourselves, weren't we, Margaret? Weren't we going to talk about cigarettes to the troops for a minute?
Yeah, I was. I was just going to say that, you know, the soldiers are carrying 80 pounds or more on their bodies, and with these fluctuating temperatures, hot temperatures in the Arab country there, and they're walking miles and miles a day, and they're, you know, they have increased adrenaline just due to the stress of being at, you know, in a combat zone, and they're probably not getting real restful sleep. Their heart rate is compromised. Their blood vessels are compromised by ingesting tar and nicotine. Now, if pregnant women can't smoke,
Margaret,
Olympic athletes
Margaret.
Can't smoke, why do the soldiers...
Lord.
Now,
Lord,
listen.
Lord. Margaret,
now, are you also sending litter bags for all the cigarette butts
oh,
so that they don't litter?
Margaret? This
what?
Is now we got to be careful because I'm going to get into it. We're going to hit that wall.
Don't cut me off.
Oh, no. I will ask that we take another subject because there is absolutely no way that I can react to that type of stereotypical nonsense except to alienate you.
And I know
how vicious you can be. And I would appreciate it if we can get through this without you doing that to me. But
no,
you are wrong.
They need a state change, which I know. I smoke a cigarette now and then myself.
Well,
I know. A state change. But to get a state change when you're wearing 80 pounds of army gear.
Look, they don't mind they don't mind carrying a chew of tobacco. They don't mind carrying a pack with them. You didn't see the article from AP.
But it's a one reduced out of three health potential.
Oh, yeah. And we're really worried about their health. That's why we sent them to Iraq.
Give the cigarettes to homeless. They would enjoy smokes. They deserve
Margaret,
to have a
you're
nice,
mean.
Ugly
you
treat.
Are mean. You are cruel.
Well,
I am not.
I
no,
hear,
no, Margaret.
I hear
Margaret.
In your voice.
Margaret.
I hear the shortness
I, Margaret.
Of your
Margaret. I am not going to cut you off, but I am going to say goodbye. This isn't going anywhere. Nobody's going to convince you about those things about which you have made up your mind. You limit yourself by what you think you know, and what you know, you think is good enough for everybody else. And I apologize, dear, but it's just not that way. Well, I was worried about the day that I had to talk to Margaret. Well, I got through it, and I'm still in one piece. Anyway, the weight of the cigarettes, it wasn't the weight of the cigarettes in the pack. It was that when they were moving things forward, in the old days when guys like me were in the military, they used to be a part of our rations because the government understood that there are folks who have different habits. Now, do they move alcohol to the front lines because these guys have a drinking habit and alcohol is somehow or other, you know, going to serve as a calming agent? And wouldn't it be nice? I don't know how that works, but I assume there's a minimal amount of it because, unlike tobacco, alcohol can fix you to where you can't work. And so these guys do need to have their heads clear. They don't need to be distracted because they need a cigarette. It is to worry about the health of the troops in Iraq, outside of the lead poisoning that they face, it's beyond the pale. You have just heard, folks, my biggest enemy, a shooter. I mean, that is the essence of a shooter. Those young men, if they want to smoke cigarettes, we need to make sure that they have what they need in that regard. If they want to chew a tobacco, it makes the doors of those vehicles all brown and crummy looking and everything. But let's get them halfway around the world and just let them jones for cigarettes while they got all these other things on their mind, which is pretty much what we did because the people that think that cigarettes are bad for us, in fact, affected how it is that we take care of our troops in that regard. So we sit there and speak about their better health on the one hand and send them halfway around the world to take a chance on dying on the other. I just, what happens to the guy that's laying there with his chest blown apart and the only thing that he's got to bring him any kind of peace at all as he's passing to the other side is that smoke with his buddy? Have you guys ever seen any kind of a depiction like that in your life? But that hasn't been a part of what we could do in this war, certainly not 2 weeks ago. And the shooters are so strong in their political position, the politically correct, that when AP printed that story, it never showed up. You never heard it on the news. No discussion whatever on the news. There have been some comments in the last week or so about how it is that some of these guys have finally gotten the tobacco. But there wasn't anybody from any of CNN, Fox, CNBC. I'm sitting there watching all these guys flipping back and forth between them, watching to see what they're all reporting. And when this thing came out from the Associated Press, there wasn't anything there. There wasn't anything on the local news. The only person that I know, besides whoever might have printed that AP story that made an issue of it, was right here at KSCO, AM 1080, me, Thursday the 3rd of April. And by the way, the call-in lines today are 479-1080, 477-1340. The fax number is 475-2967. I'm sitting here waiting for whatever comes in. Anyway, wow. Yeah, prejudice sees what it wants and cannot see what is plain. People that make up their minds are, in fact, prejudiced. I for a long time I tried to figure out how I could get people around me to understand that much of what they think they know they don't, that the people that really are considered wise and that do discuss wisdom discuss how it is that the more wise a human being, the more likely they are to understand how little they know. When I was printing T-shirts actively, right now my printing press is between shops, but when I was printing T-shirts actively, I tried to put something on a T-shirt that would reflect that sentiment, and what I finally printed was, because I'm not a shooter, was Why Limit Yourself by What You Think You Know? And that I see that as a probably one of the most prophetic things I will ever say. I don't know where it came from, but it's just such a great line. When people get convinced that they know stuff that's not true, secondhand smoke. I was sitting down there at the shopping center the other day, and there's a little gal downwind to me that's getting ready to have a baby, and she's all worried that secondhand smoke might affect her pregnancy in some way. And I shudder at this kind of mythology. You know, there was a time in this country that we could spot a witch because we'd hold her underwater. And if she didn't drown, then we'd know she was a witch. And then we could take her out and kill her, you know, by fire or whatever. I mean, these kind of stupid thinkings are you know, come on. This is 2003. We're in the 21st century. We have had thousands of years to learn from experience. The effect of smokers on non-smokers is zip. Point nothing. There are no studies. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go back and finish the story on the Nevada legislature. I'm just not going to get into it today, but man, I want to. We'll do it a different direction. The legislature in the state of Nevada heard the testimony from myself regarding the lack of a definition for a helmet, so that when I'm riding out there and some officer wants to challenge whether or not what I'm wearing is a helmet, I can prove to him absolutely, or the court, if he decides to cite me anyway, that I am in fact in compliance with the law. The head of the highway patrol actually sat there and testified that his officers did not know what to do, that he had instructed them that he couldn't advise them what to do, and the only helmet tickets that they're writing in Nevada right now are to people that are not wearing anything. So this body sits up there, and they listen to this testimony, and then to the guy from NHTSA, who is undoubtedly, you know, he was one that's on Margaret's email list, came up there and made up all these horror stories about all these things that aren't true about what helmets do for people. And the next thing you know, I'm sitting there looking at a full-blown state senator named Nolan. And Senator Nolan explains that the law is clearly all messed up and is unenforceable, and everybody admits that. And then votes against changing it. Now, not necessarily a repeal, because I told him, I said, if you want to modify the bill so that it doesn't do this to people, then do that. But the people that want a helmet law, you need to fix this statute, because the courts are going to take it out. And the people that don't want a helmet law, this is the perfect fix for the statute, because if you repeal it, the fact that you can't define a helmet won't matter. So, yeah, they sat right there and admitted that the law was messed up, pretty much conceding that the cops couldn't enforce it, pretty much conceding that it violated my rights because I couldn't comply with it, and then voted not to do anything about it. And so do I wonder why it is that people think the system is broken? No. Do I wonder why it is that it's so hard to get people to go out there and do the testimony that I did? Yeah, I mean, no, not at all. And yes, I understand completely how it gets that way. And right now, line one, Robert wants to say something about helmet laws. Should I put it on and just shut up, Robert?
No, I think you're right. You know, I used to live on Highway 84 over there by La Honda. And, I mean, every weekend we used to run across, you know, motorcyclists, one thing or another. Usually, you know, it's somebody in a car that's not really paying attention. And I used to ride bikes a lot, you know, and as a matter of fact, I used to sort of, you know, when the sirens would go off, we'd go running off and, you know, pull these guys off the road. And,
yeah, right.
And one instant, I was with a fireman, and we're both standing there, and this poor guy had, I think it was a car had sort of crossed the road, but or crossed the line, and he'd hit the car, and he sort of spearheaded himself right into the side of a hill. Now, he was wearing a helmet, right?
Yeah.
And we gently started to remove the helmet from his head, and apparently, well, we didn't know this, but we applied a respirator to it, and it literally blew his brains out. I mean, because I guess from the helmet just sort of crushed his head, you know. We couldn't tell whether he was, you know, badly hurt or not, you know.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stories like that, and it And it happens, and unless unless it's your life, you know, that's what the people that favor these laws tend not to understand, is
right.
That it's not their life. Excuse me. Like in my case, I've been writing for 45 years.
Right.
I'm still alive. I have survived everything they have thrown at me except the straight blindside T-bone, and everybody that was at that meeting at the Nevada legislature testified that over 15 miles an hour, whether or not a helmet can help you is
that's
dubious
right.
Anyway.
That is absolutely correct, and, you know, I had a helmet actually save me, but it wasn't my fault that I got in the accident. You know, I mean, I was way behind this person, and I was coming up behind them, approaching them, and they had their turn signal, and they were sitting there, and they were sitting there, and they were sitting there. And it seemed like they were having some sort of conversation or something.
Waiting for you. They were waiting for you.
Well, they waited, all right, because as soon as I got right up next to them, she pulled right out in front of me.
Yep.
You
know? And they'll do it. I swear to you,
they do it all the time.
And they don't understand, or in one case, there's a guy that works at the Department of Motor Vehicles, way up in the top of the organization that I know, that rides a Harley Davidson.
Right.
And just for your poetic justice, you know, memory banks. He was driving down the road one day, and this lady did that to him, this older lady, and she turned left to him, and he had to lay the bike down to save himself, and there was a cop sitting over there on the corner watching this.
Right.
So he pulled out and pulled her over, and they're talking to her. My buddy's standing there while they're doing it, and she made some stupid remark about, well, he shouldn't be riding that motorcycle.
That's
and,
right. That's
and,
absolutely right.
And the cop knew who the guy was.
Yeah.
He'd already identified the guy. On the spot, took her license. Boom,
yeah.
Just like that.
Well,
just
I mean,
like that.
You're right about the, you know, people need to be aware. Riders also need to, you know, have a little bit more safety check going on.
Well, I saw one the other day that I'm going to tell you, I don't believe it would have happened if the guy hadn't been wearing a helmet. I'm going down the freeway now. And it's one of the most shocking things I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It scared me, and I'm behind a guy, and I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to go.
Right.
Here come five of these crotch rocket riders. Now, I'm saying crotch rocket. I'm not...
Well, no, it's true, you know.
What I'm talking about. I'm talking about those racing-style motorcycle
riders. Right.
Okay, five of them come by, and they're seemingly reasonable in the way they're riding and everything. I don't think anything of it. And suddenly I see it, and the guy's maybe 150 foot ahead of me. And I don't know if you've ever seen anybody do this, but he picked his right leg up off the pad and put both legs over the left side of the motorcycle, and he's sitting there dragging his toes on the freeway at 65 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it put my heart in my throat. What kind of moron? And I think what happens is that those helmets cut off the circulation of them guys' brains somehow.
Well, it also gives them a false sense of security. I mean, you know, you're talking about a bunch of hot dogs.
Yeah.
Those are people who ride responsibly and who want to be out and enjoy a motorcycle ride.
Yeah, the worst that I've ever seen. The worst case I've ever seen. I got to let you go.
Right.
Thanks much for calling in, Robert.
Well,
I got
good
another.
Luck for you.
All right, thanks,
all right.
Man.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's see, who have I got? Art? I got, no, come on, Art. What do you want to do what? Art? Art's not there. I didn't push the heart button hard enough. Art, are you there?
Hello.
Okay.
Hey, how you doing?
We can't talk about Margaret. What else you got?
Oh, well.
No, I'm serious. We can't do that, dude. As much as I'd like to, I'll do it off the air. I went further than I should have, and I apologize to the audience.
No, I thought it was very entertaining, actually.
Okay. But I survived it okay?
Well, oh, yeah. You did a great job.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I tried not to be rude, but I am,
no, you were excellent.
I'm always afraid when people that are in that group that I most despise show up, and I have to be polite, and I don't have any personal feelings about her. It's just that behavior that I cannot abide, that shoulder thing where they know what's right for everybody else. There's an explosion takes place in my mind, and I worried about Margaret. So besides talking about Margaret, what'd you have today?
Well, I agree with the what you're talking about, the troops needed to have their smokes. I don't understand why they couldn't get that to their troops in the first place.
Unbelievable. And you know that there was a law. There was a law, and the APS, the AP story told about the fact that from the Civil War until I think it was 1955 or 56, there was actually a legal requirement that the military provide smokes to the troops.
Well, they should.
Or something. Make sure they don't run out.
Well,
I mean, if they're going to make them by their own, that's fine, but make sure that they're moved up along with the rest of the supplies.
Yes, and I thought that your comment also about... having a smoke with your buddy there, you know, if you're wounded or something. I mean, that's a very good point.
Come on.
And then the point that she brought up about did they bring plastic bags for disposal of littering?
No, that's if you notice, that's where I broke it off. It's just like, no.
I don't understand that kind of thinking. But, you know, I'm glad that she did call, because it's very entertaining to listen to people that have that wacky point of view. I don't understand it whatsoever.
I said we weren't going to do that.
I could see on the TV, the place looks like a dump anyway. I mean, were you going to put the cigarette butts in a plastic bag and take it to the dump?
As a matter of fact, they do. There's a thing called field stripping, and you don't leave trash behind, because trash is an indicator, and it's all about military. If anybody was in the military, they know that smokers don't leave their ashes all over the place, because you're responsible for cleaning up after yourself when you're in the military. Now, in Santa Cruz, the anti-smokers have hidden all the ashtrays, so they worry about cigarette butts everywhere, and it's because they've gotten rid of the ashtrays in their disdain for smokers.
They have.
It's a stupid catch-22 for them, and life is tough for us. And, Art, thank you for your call. I'm going to grab Millie before she gets away, because she's one of my all-time favorite callers. But thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Catch my show now and then, will you?
Oh, I sure will.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Talk to you later. Millie.
Hey, Quigley.
Is this the Millie that I know, Millie?
Oh, yes, that Millie. Oh,
okay. How you doing?
That Millie. Okay. I'm not gonna
call you any of those names that they called you down here one day, and I really do.
That doesn't bother me at all, believe me. I went through World War II. Talking about credibility.
We got about a minute.
Yeah, well, hurry. Let me get it through.
Please.
Your last caller of the female gender regarding credibility said last week that a bill to make German the first language in the U.S. was defeated by only one vote. She's so crazy, I can't believe it. It happened in Pennsylvania, a small county in Pennsylvania, where it lost by one vote.
Millie, please don't.
Okay.
If you hadn't got the reference all the way where it led back to Margaret, I wouldn't have a problem, but we cannot.
Okay, well, I'll ask you a question on insurance.
We're running out. Hurry.
Okay. Do motorcyclists have to have collision and negligibility insurance in the same way that motorists do?
The same 10, 20, and 5 that you guys do. They're trying to make us carry medical insurance, but that's absolutely wrong.
Why is it wrong?
Well, I'm gonna answer you offline, because I got to disconnect on you, but I will answer that for you.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. The reason that it's wrong is for the same reason that they don't require skiers to have medical insurance or surfers to have medical insurance as a matter of enjoying their hobby, whatever it is. It is wrong because you cannot take one group of people and discriminate against them. We quit doing that in this country a long time ago. Slowly but surely, we're creeping back into it in the hands of the shooters. This is Richard Quigley. This has been Freedom Fighter Perspective for the last 40 minutes. You listen to KSCO, Santa Cruz, California. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, listeners. I'll see you next Thursday. It's 1 o'clock.